Hello, good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today we will continue with our sharing of the book, The Path to Truth for Modern Day Bodhisattva Practitioner. We are at page 119, yeah? Transcending Religious Barrier. So this is a very good and appropriate title, and it's very beautiful. Okay, we will go into it and then try to discuss it. People need religion because it teaches us about life and provides us with a purpose. So generally, I think this one should be sufficient for most people to move into religion. But there are other specific different reasons where certain people go into religion. So everyone is different. But basically, I think the purpose is the same. They want to understand life, and they want to understand what is the meaning of life and the purpose of life. And why are there so many religions? So for me, when I started, it was very simple. I thought I don't need religion, because as a science student with all the background, I can understand many things. I don't really need a religion to back me up. But then later on, the curiosity arises. Because I want to know what does all this religion really preach or teach. Then I start to study them, go into them. Then the moment I bump into the Buddhist teaching, the very moment I saw the Four Noble Truths, I realized that was what you need, because it was so scientific. Based on nature's law, no need to believe anything. So immediately my nature knew the search. So there was no need to search anymore. Initially, we went to find out, me and a group of my classmates after Form 5, we went to many religious authority or sects and teachings. And we couldn't really come into understanding with most religion, because they can't answer our question, our basic question. So there were a lot of question marks and uncertainty. Then initially I thought what my mother did, the Chinese traditional rites and ritual, making offering to deities, then asking for favor, I thought that was Buddhism, so I never even looked at it. Until suddenly, in Lower Six, somebody gave me a book, What Buddhists Believe, Chief Ravan, the late Chief K. Sri Dhammananda's famous book, most widely read. The first edition, the red color, I remember, thin copy. Less than half of the present thickness. Then when I flicked over that book, I was amazed and full of joy when I realized what my mother did was not Buddhism. It's in the Chinese tradition and Chinese belief system, rites and ritual. Then I became interested in what the Buddha teach. Then when I saw the Four Noble Truths, I straight away realized that that's it. Nobody can summarize all of his wisdom and understanding into just Four Noble Truths. And within that Four Noble Truths, it defines clearly all of life, both mundane and supramundane. Who can do that? Unless he's a real one. That's how my journey started. Then later on, as my understanding developed and unfolded, then I realized the purpose of religion is to bring forth certain type of belief system and truth to humanity. We are human beings, their mind lacking. They lack understanding of what is going on in life. They lack understanding of what really is life, the purpose of life. Then I realized all religion try to monopolize the truth. They always say their religion is the only truth. Then all the other religion doesn't have the truth. So these are the happening that actually arise within our civilization, our human existence. Then you look at it clearly. In fact, most religion, when they started, they have good intention. And if you look at most religion, they teach normally love and compassion, not to do evil. So many religion has this component, the first two. Means you must cultivate love, compassion, goodness, morality, wholesomeness, and avoid doing evil things, unwholesome things. Then they stop that. Apart from these two, which is common to most religion, there are a majority of religion that believe in an almighty. They call it God or by whatever religious name. Then there are also who have their philosophy, their teaching and all those things. The only religion I realize that doesn't believe in God is Buddhism, because you don't need a concept of almighty or omniscient God to actually understand life. Then I realize this is the only religion that stand up to the advent of science. When science developed, it never get into problem. It never break down. So that was the amazing part of the Buddhist teaching, the Dhamma. Then I realized it's based on truth. It's because it's based on truth. It is evergreen. It can never break down. So if you have the understanding and you know how to really filter, then you will be able to come up with the understanding of the appropriate teaching that can help you understand life, live life, and transform you into a beautiful living being. So there are many aspects of truth that you can derive from religion, which has the ingredient of truth. Then the most important thing that we should understand is truth is. The meaning is truth is truth. There is no other aspect of truth. And nobody can monopolize truth. But truth is whatever that can explain the way things are, the reality. That is the truth. If your religion can explain the way things are, that is the truth. But the problem with many religions is their religious belief and teaching system, they cannot always explain the way things are. They tend to have problems with what is happening to life, to society, to the world, even to the universe. There are many things that religion still cannot explain or cope up with. So in that sense, religion couldn't appeal to many people, provided that religion really has the truth. And for it to have the truth is not easy, because truth is. not your truth, not my truth, not anybody else's truth. Truth is just the way things are, nature's truth, nature's law that governs all of life and existence. That's true, like science, scientific truth. Very clear. That is the truth. So if it's the truth, it can explain the way things are. Then we can actually make use of it to progress, to develop understanding. So unfolding the spiritual law of nature, which are the truth that religion needs, is very important. And in this aspect, I think the Buddhist teaching has completed the full range of understanding that you need to understand. But for most religion, it's only at one aspect, the law of karma, means morality aspect of nature's truth or nature's law. That's why they talk about doing good, avoiding evil, having love, compassion, and wholesomeness, and not to arise any immoral action, speech, and thought process. So all religious teaches love and compassion and harmony. They advise the devotees to avoid doing evil things, causing selfishness to arise, leading to disharmony, conflict, war, and all those things. But strangely, our civilization is going through a phase of very strange happening. Religion is supposed to play a good role to bring about more wholesomeness, goodness, bring forth morality, and avoiding evil. But if you look around, it is always the religious war that created more disharmony, the lack of peace, and conflict all over the world. In the name of religion, they can wage war. They can create a lot of disaster. They can commit a lot of heinous type of action. Like you witness nowadays, there are so many of this, even the indiscriminate killing, suicide bombers and all those things. And sometimes they fought religious war in the name of religion. So many of these things are causing division among humanity that leads to conflict, argument, war, so giving rise to a lot of suffering and misery. So this is why the title of today's topic is very useful. Transcending religious barrier means going beyond all the division that the word religion has created. When you divide yourself into a particular religion and condemn other religion, you create division. And that's how misunderstanding, conflict, argument, leading to war comes about. So this particular title is very useful. I will read on so that we see what the author has brought up. People need religion because it teaches us about life and provides us with a purpose. No matter which religious faith we choose, what is important is to have the right goal in life and teaching that guides us to live with morality. Here he used the word discipline, not so correct, with good morality. So once you have morality, you will discipline yourself to keep the precepts and all those things, or your commandments. If we do not have the right purpose in life, we may deviate from the correct path. As the saying goes, the slightest deviation can lead us severely astray. So this one is very true, because if you are a science student, you will know. Your starting point, if you deviate by 1 degree, do you know where will you end up? Because that tangent of that 1 degree, the further you go, you actually deviate away from your goal. By a long distance, a very wide distance. So the slightest deviation initially can lead you severely astray. That is the meaning. If you just draw a tangent, 1 degree deviation, if it's to the moon, instead of hitting the moon, your rocket go out 1 degree deviation, it will end up far away from the moon. You may not even see the moon now, the orbit of the moon, because the distance between the moon and earth is very far. So all this understanding is very important. That's the reason why right view, right purpose, and right intent is very important, so that we do not debate. The next paragraph: religion based on right faith are in harmony with one another. So this one I have shared and described just now. It is based on right faith, is the common universal values, means you promote the good aspect of humanity, your human love, human compassion, human goodness, kindness, generosity, your pleasantness of character and all those things, your love. So all these are based on right faith, then not to kill people, not to do harm, not to deceive, not to cheat, not to be selfish, not to be emotionally violent, negative, not to take advantage of people, not to suppress other nations and people, not to bully others. So all these are based on the right faith of good religion. They are all based on love without bias. For example, they give for example Christianity emphasizes on universal love. Actually it's Jesus love. Jesus love and compassion to all humanity and respect for all fellow human beings. Buddhism emphasizes more on compassion. Actually, love and compassion goes together, because Buddhists believe that all living beings have the Buddha nature within them, and that compassion is a deep love for all living beings. The spirit of Ciji comes from the four infinite minds. They are quite similar to the four Buddhist Vihara mind state. First is loving kindness, which is metta. Then compassion, which is karuna. Then joy is sympathetic joy, is mudita. You rejoice in the goodness of others. The last one is selfless giving. Instead of equanimity, they change it to selfless giving. So Ciji does not discriminate against other religion. It considers everyone as family, as a family, and respect all religion equally. Just as she respected God and Jesus Christ, likewise non-Buddhists can admire the Buddha's wisdom and compassion. We should support one another with gratitude and respect, broadening our mind to encompass all human beings. Ciji volunteer can transcend the barrier of religion and contribute with love. This example is very good. Many Christians and Catholics have participated in Ciji's volunteer training program to become certified commissioners or Ciji Faith Corps. members while still maintaining their religious belief and faith, maintaining their deep belief in their own respective religion. In many of our practices, it is easy to see that Siji truly transcends religious differences and that great love has no boundary. Now this is what makes Siji unique. For example, most aborigines who live in the mountains of Hsinchu County in Taiwan, they are Catholics. The Catholic nuns, they are very loving and care very much for the local youth. One year, a typhoon hit the mountain area and damaged the church and adjoining youth center. The nuns could not bear to see the local youth lost their activity center. So they went out to raise funds to rebuild it. When Siji volunteers in Hsinchu County heard about it, they immediately journeyed into the mountain to help rebuild the youth center. Even though the mountain roads were difficult to travel, Siji volunteers still delivered supplies to them every month. In the olden days, there was a Catholic hospital for women and children in Taitung, Taiwan, where four or five nuns worked. Each year when I went to Taitung for the year-end blessing ceremony, those nuns would come to participate in the candlelight and prayer ceremony. Our hearts were connected. As medical technology advanced, is it something missing? Oh, I think two paragraphs missing. Oh, correct. Yeah. Okay. As medical technology advanced, this hospital gradually become more and more obsolete. Therefore, Taitung Siji volunteer helped the nuns remodel the hospital into a hospice center. The nuns were very grateful for Siji's help, and Siji volunteer were grateful to the nuns for taking care of the local seniors and terminal cancer patients. They truly combined their strength and worked together to serve people. This is true for Siji volunteer abroad as well. For example, local Siji volunteers in Zulu, South Africa, are very broad-minded. Most of them are Christian, yet they promote Siji's spirit and principle. When they conduct orientation to introduce Siji, they hang a banner in their church with large letters that say, Taiwan Buddhist Siji Foundation. They are selfless and they give of themselves according to their abilities. For this reason, they have earned recognition from the pastor of the church and the chieftain of their tribe. So this is pretty amazing. Eh? In 2002, Indonesia suffered severe flood. Siji shipped 50,000 tons of rice from Taiwan to Indonesia for relief. Most Indonesians are Muslim. Prior to receiving the rice, their imam led a prayer and said, Allah bring us rice through the hands of Taiwan Siji volunteer. We must be grateful for their love and learn from them. So this is real religious harmony. Not only did they accept our love, but most importantly, boundaries of religion were transcended. The recipient knew that Siji is a Buddhist organization because throughout the distribution, all the volunteers were war vests with the Siji logo. As devout Muslim, they were skeptical and worried. They asked their imam, can we eat the rice given to us by Buddhists? The imam replied, We must accept the rice with gratitude. Then they asked the volunteer, why do you wear the vest if you do not discriminate between religion? They wanted the volunteer to take off their vest because of the church logo. Church volunteer wisely replied, there are so many people here. We wear the vest so that people will know we are volunteers. Those poor people were very happy after receiving the high quality rice. Tsuchi volunteers held their hand and helped them carry it. The recipient continuously thanked the volunteer. The volunteer wholeheartedly contributed with all their love. Even though they were physically exhausted, they were very happy. For over 40 years, Tsuchi volunteer has been working diligently to purify people's mind. Whether people are Buddhist, Christian, Catholic, or Muslim, as long as they have true faith and are selfless, they will form a pure stream that serves to educate and purify people's mind. Tsuchi volunteers are everywhere, and we hope to spread great love to every corner of suffering in the world. No matter which country is hit by disaster, Tsuchi volunteer open their hearts and give unconditionally with the same love, respect, and gratitude. This expresses the spirit of great love. So this is how a great organization that has a good understanding can actually help the world. So we finish this chapter, which is a very good sharing. So maybe I will talk a bit more before we go to chapter 5, Save the World from Disaster is a continuation. So transcending religious barrier is not an easy thing to do, especially in our world is very sensitive, because there are a lot of religious fanatics and also strong devotees. So some, they are so conditioned that they cannot even receive things from other religion. They cannot eat from food or relief offering from other religious belief or labor. So at times, it's not easy to break that very staunch thinking. So religious harmony to transcend the religious barrier is not really easy, and my nature rejoices if people can do it. And what we have witnessed here is at least there is one organization that did it very well, like Tsuchi. Although they started off from a Buddhist concept or ideology, the founder is based on the Buddhist teaching. She started all this relief work, but she decided to actually bring forth the understanding that relief work should transcend religious barrier. When you have love, you have compassion, it does not discriminate. There is no bias. Whoever who is in need will be helped. So they try their very best within their own ability and capability to help, to bring about condition to release suffering. So this is real, what we call compassion in action, where you can witness happening in the world. So many areas of calamity or disaster or nature's calamity, you tend to see the work of Tsuchi spreading its wing, and they can be seen almost everywhere, because now their organization is global and quite big, in the sense that it's you can see them almost worldwide, in almost many countries all over the world. It's not only in Asia. They have centers in America, Europe, Middle East, Africa, the African continent, and also South American countries. So all this are made possible because people have faith in their organization. And those who join them, they can see this is really compassion in action, relief work for humanity, and they did a lot of great things. And they are able to mobilize quite a lot of funding from the masses, from people who has the means to help, to actually make a difference to people's life. So this is what we call wholesomeness, good karmic condition that can come to fruition in the future. When you perform all this wholesomeness, generosity, goodness, when you participate or donate in whatever manner or kind, it will come back to you. You reap what you sow. Whatever you donate or contribute to, it is to your nature, karmic nature, because you reap what you sow. So in future, there will be condition for you to receive all this wholesomeness. So this type of selfless type of compassion in action activity is very worthy of support. That's why our Kayamita Fund every year we do contribute, and my family too, we also contribute in whatever way. And a lot of our Kayamita, they are part of Siji too. Even my brothers, my sister, they all. Then within our Kayamitas, there are many who receive it from Siji too before they came and joined me as Kayamita. And one of them is Christina. You want to know more, you go and talk to her. She told me initially when she was having this problem, Siji people came to her and did them. But finally, she managed to locate Sui An and came to the class. Then she came out of this by herself through an understanding. And now she understands the beauty of the Buddhist teaching, the Dhamma. So she put it into practice and changed her life. She straightened her view and transformed the way she lived her life. Then she see the beauty of Siji too. So now she volunteered. She has been there for many years to help people who are like her in the early days. So now he is doing the work of relieving suffering, helping out in Siji activity, and many of their wholesome activity. I think every year they came out with some fundraising projects. Then off and on, if there is anything that needs them to help out, she will be there. Like even the recent pandemic, COVID-19, she also went out and helped many. Because there are a lot of these people who are lost during this pandemic. They lost their job. They were short of even money to pay rent, to feed their children, to tie over their day-to-day needs. So luckily, Suji managed to locate some of them. Then they do their part. They help out in many ways. So this is how an organization that has the structure, the sincerity, the faith and the understanding can help humanity. So if we have the condition to bring forth such organization to fruition or to support them, we should. Because as an individual, we can't do much. But as a group, as a organization, it is different, and this organization can grow. And when this one grow, actually the Dhamma grow, because this organization of compassion in action is based on Dhamma understanding. You must have love, you must have compassion, you must have kindness and goodness. So when you help release suffering, you bring about a better world, you bring about joy, you bring about hope to humanity, and you can transform the life of many who are subject to all this crisis. Without all this relief work and organization, there is nobody to really help them. Even the government, they can't do much. Yesterday, I saw this international news. It was about Philippines. Actually, it's very pitiful. They have about 20 million of these poor migrants living in illegal sheds and huts near the sea area there, the seafront there. A lot of this, we all call it slum or what that one, illegal one, what you call, rumah haram. All those things, squatters, the word is squatters, a lot of them. And before the COVID-19, they have odd job because they interview many families. One of these family, both are actually non-Philippine citizens. They are illegal migrants. They have 3 or 4 children, I think. Then they survive frugally on the shade and all say, initially because the husband managed to, I think, save some money and buy a car and drive taxi, grab or what. Then they managed to feed the family. Then because of the pandemic, MCO, all those things, they can't really have the normal income. So the income start to drop. Then one day, somehow, like Lebanon there, the explosion happened, 300,000 people affected, and a lot of people lost their livelihood, job and everything. Then I think the husband couldn't go out or what. Their income dropped to about less than 20% of what they used to bring home, and they don't have enough food. And the government promised them relief, but there is this, I don't know, they call me or don't know what. They say they can't, the government don't have the money to give to everyone. So he said, whatever relief, they only come in the form of like, tsuchi, like that is it, the rice and all those things. So what they need is food, sardine and all those things, they can't find. So sometimes they got no choice, they got to hunt for whatever green in the wilderness, take home and just cook as veggie, because they need to feed their children. Then no money to buy milk and all those things. So it's not easy. And they were going through tough time. But so many of them, the Philippine government also can't really manage. And according to that person in charge, I think the Majelis guy or what, we call it Majelis here, there they call it by some other name. He came out and spoke. He said, if this continue on for another few months, they also don't have funds. The government is exhausted. There is no more money to go around. And the economy must come back. But the number of COVID-19 cases keep on going up. And they have to implement the lockdown, all those things. So if you look at the severity of all these people affected, we as cultivator, Kanyamitas, Buddhists, we should count our good blessing that we are still not affected in the sense that we have karma. So this is something we should reflect, contemplate. Then we should send our kind thoughts then in whatever way you 自己 can help or whatever, then through our fundings or donation, they can do something. But the world is the world, suffering, miserable, living beings are all poor. There is no way you can help all. But whatever condition of relief possible, based on what has been established, hopefully that one can make a difference. Then we need the support from other nations who are less affected. Like Lebanon is a very good case. So severe, the disaster, the loss of life. The country is already in a mess before COVID-19. After COVID-19 is worse, then with that blast, it's like a mini atomic bomb of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, so severe. And really amazed at the news, but they say there were about 2,700 ton of this ammonia nitrate that was stored underneath the pot there. Don't know why they go and store it there, and that one suddenly become a mini atomic bomb and destroy the whole of that Beirut, the capital city of Lebanon. And the country already so poor, so badly affected by war and crisis. That's why your karma is such, you are born there. It is really miserable. And now the people, despite what happened, they are coming out to demonstrate because they blame the government for what happened. Why go and store all those things down there? Then the government is not able to do much for them. So you see on the news, you can sense then that love, that compassion. But basically it's also coming. So we have to understand, we should not be too emotional. Like the Buddha said, thing is just the way it is. Condition like that, things will like that, it's all karmic related. So all this understanding will enable us to reflect, to contemplate. Then we can, whatever kind thought possible, we will radiate, we will send, and we hope they will be able to come out of this. Then may the blessing of the Triple Gem help the world to turn around, help all these people who are afflicted or affected to gain relief. Then may they recover to good life conditions so that they can move on. So all these are happening. So when we are mindful, as cultivator, we see the urgency in cultivating. Then when we cultivate, we have the means to make a difference. That's why your vow will be very strong. Your understanding will enable you to move in a very different way. So if there can be more people like all these great beings who come out with this activities, organization that can help humanity, can relieve human suffering, save the world from disaster. We should have more and more of these great beings, cultivator. And many of these are going the Bodhisattva way. That's why you have developed the affinity to go the Bodhisattva way. You should take. You should determine, aspire, and do your best. And all these are possible. It's not impossible. So when we have the understanding of the real cultivation, there are a lot of possibility that can arise. So as Kanyamita, we know we have the potential, the understanding. It's a matter of your heart. If your heart really wants to grow and move on, you can actually, based on all this condition, develop the understanding, the faith, the belief, then you move. That's the reason why a lot of people can have very heavy vows, very strong vows to come for the living beings, to release suffering, to bring about great difference to humanity's condition. Okay, we move on to the next chapter. Chapter 5. Save the world from disaster. So, in another sense, is to protect our planet, protecting our planet. Tzuji's great love is not only directed towards humankind or humanity, but also to material objects and the environment. We often say that it is unbearable to see the earth damaged. The earth is like a mother who nurtures everything in this world. With her abundant resources, along with the right season and conditions, seeds sprout and grow, animals and plants all rely on the earth, Mother Earth, for nourishment and sustenance. Many calamities, both natural and man-made, are the result of damage done to earth. So this is based on the understanding of karma, cause and effect. The Vietnam War is one example. Vietnam suffered heavy bombing and defoliant was sprayed throughout its forest to clear away the foliage so that people would have nowhere to hide. The residual toxins seriously polluted the land and air. After the war, countless landmines were left in the ground. As a result, Southeast Asia, once reputed as the world's rice bowl, lost much of its farmable land during the war, leaving the local to live in destitution. Moreover, in order to make weapons and obtain raw metal, many mountains have been mined. War had damaged mountains, land and sea, resulting in tremendous loss of life and resources. During the Persian Gulf War, a great amount of crude oil flowed into the ocean. The war not only wasted resources, but also adversely impacted the marine ecology or ecosystem. So these are examples of man-made disaster, not nature. Disaster. Aside from war, mountain roads and tunnels have been built to facilitate transportation and economic growth. These difficult large-scale construction projects also took a toll on the local ecosystem and the environment. Humans have indeed caused dreadful damage to this planet. Some mountains are covered with compacted rocky soil. Trees keep the soil from being washed away. These trees also collect rainwater and gradually release it to nourish the soil. Sadly, humans have severely damaged this mountain through excessive development and logging. Continuous deforestation has hollowed out mountains and loosened the soil. During heavy rain, this causes landslip, which damage the environment and can become devastating disaster for people. Taiwan rivers and streams are steep and rapid. The debris and rocks are washed downstream, have gradually elevated riverbed. As a result, this river and stream can no longer replenish the reservoir as they once did. This continuous damage caused by man has cut out the source of the reservoir's water. Nature is a macrocosm and the human body is a microcosm. Both operate under same principles. For example, if one's body bleeds for a long time, one's life will be in danger. Excavating a mountain is like operating on the body. When we drill into an aquifer, it is as if an artery in our body has been severed. The ecological health of the microcosm will be damaged, and it will gradually deteriorate. The destruction of the beautiful landscape by excessive development is like a healthy person undergoing a necessary operation. It is worrisome and unbearable. People often speak of conquering nature. Does mankind truly have such absolute power? Humans are very contradictory. In order to benefit ourselves and satisfy our material desire, we damage the land in so many ways. Therefore, the earth is responding with global warming. As a result, our climate has changed. The ice caps are melting. The sea level keeps rising. The groundwater supply is slowly disappearing, which may cause the land to sink. These are all catastrophes that we will have to deal with in our future. Living beings depend on the earth for survival, so we must take good care of it. If you want to give the earth a break, we must first begin to conserve its resources. Not only must we stop mining, we must also commit ourselves to recycling and reuse material. By doing so, we can prevent the exhaustion of the earth's resources and reduce pollution. Tsuji volunteer advocates environmental protection because we cannot bear to see the earth damaged. We only had one earth, so it is everyone's mission to cherish and care for it. So this is their concern as Tsuji members and as an organization. So the author has written this. But if you look at the bigger picture, a lot of this thing that happened, we can't really say is right or wrong. If it's based on selfishness, it's against nature's law. Still, no right, no wrong. If you violate nature's law, there will be nature's repercussion. So everything is cause and effect. Maybe the nature's law of karma, it will take effect. So, you reap what you sow, whatever causes and condition humanity planted, the result of it will be the fruition of all their action, collective action. So, more and more understanding need to be given to what happened to save our planet, to save Mother Earth. So if we had the experience of COVID-19, we can see one very obvious thing. When there is economic lockdown, movement control, of course the economy will suffer. A lot of people will be affected. The new normal will happen. But the good thing is the environment gets cleaned up, less pollution, less development, less of this destructive activity that can cause major disruption to our environment, our Mother Earth, pollution and all those things. So we start to see the result of slowing down of a lot of this development activity that can be detrimental to the world. But there is also another understanding or another fact. With the population that we are having, 7 over billion, there is no such thing as slow down development or stop development entirely. So what is the solution? The solution is to develop more understanding to mitigate. That's why as a civil engineer, I know we need to come up with mitigation measure. Then we need to develop environmental impact study to come up with a study to understand how much environmental impact can our project cause to society. Then we have to mitigate them. Then of course, we have to spend more, I should say resources, not only money, resources towards this end. We must mitigate pollution. So we must go for first, green energy, environmentally friendlier type of energy. So we should do away with a lot of those that brings about severe pollution to our society, to our planet. So fossil fuel should be replaced over time. Then we should have more and more of this green energy. It can be solar, but solar also has its debris side effect, the panel and all this thing. Hydro is very good, but every time a hydro dam is built, there is a lot of environmental impact and disruption. But if you manage it well, I think it can serve its function. That's why you need good engineering skill, technology and understanding. The most fearful thing is the collapse of the dams, the erosion that arises through lack of understanding of its pattern of erosion. Because sometimes the dam management, you never expect like what happened in China, the Three Gorges Dam. What happened in China was the Three Gorges Dam was based on very well-planned engineering. But then, all of a sudden this year, 2020, the amount of rainfall was almost not 30% more, no, three times the capacity of a normal rainfall in the year. That's why they are confronted with tremendous amount of water coming down from the catchment, then overflowing. There is one spillway that actually take the water off, the excessive water off. So the spillway also overloaded. Then the amount of water that come out, they couldn't control. That's why the downstream experienced a lot of flooding damages and all those things. But this is a lot better than the ancient day. They have record. I saw the commentaries about the Three Gorges Dam, why they have to build. Because China suffer a lot of this surprise flood from the three major rivers. That's why they have to dam the three major rivers. They call it the Three Gorges Dam. Otherwise, every don't know how many years, less than 10 years, there is one major flood and disaster. So because of the Three Gorges Dam, the situation has harmonized for a long time. But then suddenly this type of thing happened. That's why human beings, humanity has to learn. And because of what China is nowadays, he has the capacity and the ability to tackle such major disaster. That's why luckily we have a China that has grown very strong, very capable and very big. Otherwise in the olden day, they were not able to do anything against the might of nature. Nature can be very, very severe. And without the proper technical understanding, you cannot cope with nature. You cannot even bring about solution to nature's problem. That's why as an engineer, I felt we played a great role. Actually, engineers can make big difference to a country's economy. And they can come up with a lot of very wholesome projects that can have a lot of not only economic benefits, but also help relieve suffering, major disaster, which humanity never expect. They actually preempt all these things. That's why we have dam management. We have mitigation measure against many things. Then we also come up with solution to environmental problems, especially public health engineering. Without the understanding of public health engineering, our pollution level, our destruction of environment would have been very severe. Then water management, there's an amount of drinking water and all those things. All this need engineering. Then of course, we have also all the sophisticated IT development is all technical based, engineering based. Then all our buildings, our highways, our port, everything, even our flight technology, they involve engineering. So even sound pollution, sonic boom and all those things, the technical people need to solve the problem of sonic boom and all those things, of sound pollution. So there are many things that our planet need to overcome. And you need beings who have this understanding to come. That's why they can come in many forms. So Bodhisattva doesn't mean you are just a cultivator. Like my case, I choose this career. At almost most of my life, when I came later, I realized I choose this profession. When I was very young, standard 2, I already knew I want to be a civil engineer. That's very strange. And I chose this subject because my nature knows this is the career or occupation that can make big difference to the world, that can have great impact to help the world, the planet, humanity. And in my profession, we have this definition which is very good. The engineers, we define our profession is to make use of the resources of nature, means to convert the resources of nature for the benefit and happiness of mankind. So that is indeed a very noble profession. But we also use it to mitigate a lot of things. Then we help to come up with creative solution to our planet, our whatever problems that humanity may face. So all these are the various understanding that we need to introduce. So to save the world from disaster is not just to blame people and command and all those things. You can have development. You must have a good balance, but you must balance it with understanding, with good engineering solution, mitigation and all those things. Then the world can be a better world. Then if we need to slow down certain aspect of development, we have to. Of course, the other professions also play their role, like the medical profession. Without the medical profession, the pandemic, I tell you, will be a great disaster for our planet, but because of all these medical professionals. That's why our planet, if you look at the way our civilization evolved, we have a lot of role play by the various professions, and there are a lot of new career opportunity arising because of society's need. But the sad thing is, we are having a lot of people taking this psychiatrist course and psychological course because they realize a lot of our human younger generation people are having mental problems. So mental problem, actually, you not only need psychiatrists and psychologists, you need spiritual people. you need spiritual understanding to actually deal with a lot of all these things, so it's not easy. But what I'm trying to share with you is the way to save the world from disaster. You have to look at it from many, many more angles than I share with you on the mitigation measures, all these things. These are very useful, very important, and we have to really look into it. We cannot neglect all this, because we cannot tell the world to stop the economic growth. It has too much economic impact. So now it's not COVID-19 impact, it's economic impact. COVID-19 causes all this. So unemployment, joblessness, then the economic disaster that comes with all this can be very severe. And when people are without salary or employment, without the basic necessity to survive and to live, it can be very, very frightening. So you don't know what will happen, because when the people are affected, if there is not enough understanding to come up with relief measure and a good balance, things can go very wrong, very, very wrong. And they are not really out of the woods as yet, as far as COVID-19 is concerned, because the new cases are still a lot. And the latest is there is a hope of vaccine coming, but that one hopefully it will come by. So the first one is the Russian one, but that one also before stage 3 really take off, they already started registering it and using it, I think, in a limited way, same as the one they discovered in China. Hopefully the vaccine will come, then the world can return to more normal. So people don't have to have that fear to travel, because economic activity actually comes about because of trades, travel and movement. Once you have MCO, movement control order, you disrupt the whole thing. So the whole industry of tourism, travel, they come to a standstill. And this one have indirect impact, because all the hotel industry, and also the service industry, the tourist industry, the tour agent, then the property developer, all these people are going to be affected, because when there is shrinking income, the bank also affected. So a lot of things is going to impact upon the country, the planet, and the various nations. Then for poorer country who don't have the resources and the means, they will be worse. Like Lebanon, Middle East, African country, they don't have the resources. Even India. India couldn't cope because of the population. And they don't have that type of reserve to go all out. And they cannot print money like US. If they can print money like US, maybe they will print, Modi will print. But Modi say all the big note he withdraw. He doesn't want all the dirty money around. So we have situation where they have to look around. So not easy. Okay, I think that is enough for today. We have good enough sharing. We covered 2 chapters. Now it's 4:15. Maybe we can have our 45 minutes of meditation. So we will stop here. Then after that, we will continue from the 45 minutes of awareness based meditation. So I will off the light. Then you can have your 45 minutes of awareness based meditation. So remember, relax and maintain awareness. Don't try to know. Let the mind settle down. Then most important thing is to realize your true mind, the awareness nature within. The awareness nature is just aware without the thought. Whatever that arise, let it be. Then just aware, finish, aware, finish. Stay with the awareness. Miss the mind that is just aware. So the awareness nature, you need to develop clear understanding of it. When you can be with the awareness nature, means you are with your true mind, then your wisdom energy will be there. Your clarity will be there. Your understanding will be there. Then without thought, the awareness is so beautiful. You will experience the true mind, which is silent, relaxed, and just aware. There is clarity, tranquility, and stillness. You will experience them all. That is what meditation is all about. So with that mind, it can develop a lot of understanding. It can meditate on its own. It can understand who are you, what are you, how you function as a human being. All this become possible. Okay, I'll let you meditate on your own. Just relax, maintain awareness, and let the mind settle down. You need to develop your own initial mindfulness training. You can go ahead. You need a skillful means, like going through the mind sweeping method, combining metta, you can do it. Or whatever method and technique that you have to train your mind in sati, then you do it. But ultimately, you need to allow your mind to settle down. When the sati arise, stabilize it until it becomes very quiet, very still, until the mind enters sati. So it's the same. You do it through the skillful means ways or method and technique. It will also lead to the awareness way. The awareness way is faster. It takes you to the true mind straight away, silent, away. So develop the five spiritual faculty, then your mind can settle down very fast. Okay. You can slowly, mindfully, come the meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner mindfulness, inner peace, and inner calmness and awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. Then these are the mind state that you need to live life. You need to carry this mind state into your daily life. So end of the day is you must be able to be heedful in the midst of life. That's why daily mindfulness is very important. If you cannot stabilize your daily mindfulness, you cannot be heedful in the midst of life. Well, the Buddha said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. So for you to really have the ability to awaken, to meditate, you must develop the ability to be mindful, stabilize it to be ever mindful, leading to heedfulness. Heedfulness has two components. Ever mindful, constantly meditative. So when you already stabilize your mindfulness until mind enters a deep, then you are ever mindful throughout the day, aware and mindful. With that mind, you can cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. You can understand many things. You can see many things. That is what heedfulness is all about. And heedfulness is very powerful. When you are heedful, you are ever mindful. Then you can be in that mind state to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, to understand many things, to awaken. This is what meditation is all about. Okay, so now we will continue your second session. Second session is meditation reporting and whatever question you may have regarding the topic we discussed today. Yeah? How to relieve suffering. How to actually go beyond religious division. Transcending religious division. So we have covered these two topics. If you have anything to add or any question you want to ask, you can. Transcending religious barrier and save the world from disaster or protecting our planet. Okay, we open it up. Anybody? Or maybe today I do it slightly different because suddenly my wife cleaned up my room and he saw this book, The Buddha's Ancient Path by Piyadasi. This was the book I used in the early day to share the Dhamma with people. And I have marked a lot of very useful Dhamma paragraph inside there. So maybe I will make use of the opportunity to share with you first. Then page 17. Page 16, the last paragraph. Thereupon he spoke these words of victory. Okay, maybe I read from here. Nevertheless, with firm determination and complete faith in his own purity and strength. This is the Bodhisattva before he made the final resolve to sit underneath the Bodhi tree. You listen, this is very good. Nevertheless, with firm determination and complete faith in his own purity and strength, unaided by any teacher, accomplished by none, the Bodhisattva means Sakyamuni Buddha to be, as he is known before he attained enlightenment, resolved to make his final investigation in complete solitude. Cross-legged, he sat underneath the Bodhi tree, which was also called the Tree of Enlightenment or Tree of Wisdom, on the bank of the river Naranjara at Gaya, now known as Bugaya. So Buddha Gaya or Buddha Gaya is called Gaya at that time. A pleasant spot soothing to the senses and stimulating to the mind, making the final resolve with the inflexible resolution. This one you must listen. The Buddha determined, though only my skin, sinus and bones remain, and my blood and flesh dry up and wither away, yet will I never stir from this state until I attain full enlightenment, Sammasambuddhi. So resolute was the resolve, so indefatigable in effort, so unflagging in his devotion was he, and so resolved was he to realize the truth and to attain full enlightenment. And applying himself to the mindfulness of the in and out breath, or anapanasati, he developed the meditation. So this meditation that he developed while he was a child, where the Bodhisattva entered upon and dwell in the first meditative absorption or jhana, by gradual stages of relaxation, and clear comprehension, he was able to develop the meditative understanding. Then many things happened to him. It seems according to the text, it says, after he has developed the understanding, thus cleaning his mind of impurity, with the mind thus composed, he directed it towards the knowledge of recollecting past birth. This was the first knowledge attained by him at the first watch. Then the Bodhisattva directed his mind to knowledge of state of existence and in the state of each flaring according to their deeds. Jyoti Chitta and Upapada Nana. This was the second knowledge attained by him in the middle watch of the night. Next, he directed his mind to the knowledge of the destruction of Tin or Asava Kayanana. He understood as it really is the Four Noble Truths. This is Dukkha. This is the cause of arising of Dukkha. This is the cessation of Dukkha. This is the path that leads to the cessation of Dukkha. He understood as it really is. These are the asava or thing. These are the arising of thing. These are the cessation of thing. This is the path that leads to the cessation of thing. Knowing thus, seeing thus, his mind was liberated from the asava of sensual pleasure, kamasava of becoming, bhavasava and ignorant, avijasava. When his mind was thus liberated, there came the knowledge, liberated, and he understood, destroy its birth, the noble line, brahmacharya, has been lived. Done is what was to be done. There is no more of this to come. This was the third knowledge attained by him in the middle of the watch of the night. Thereupon he spoke the words of victory. Being myself subject to birth, aging, disease, death, sorrow and lamentation, and defilement, seeing danger in what is subject to these things, seeking the unborn, aging, undiseased, deathless, sorrowless, undefiled, supreme security from bondage, nibbana, I realize it, I experience it. Knowledge and vision arose in me. Unshakable is my deliverance of mind. This is the last birth. Now there is no more becoming, no more rebirth. Here rebirth means rebirth due to ignorance. Thus did the Bodhisattva Gautama on another full moon of May at the age of 35 attain supreme enlightenment by comprehending all of their fullness, the Four Noble Truths, the eternal verities, and became the Buddha, the consummate, who can cure the ills of all beings. Then after that, he said, he actually started off the teaching to the five ascetic. He said, monk, these two extremes ought not to be cultivated by the recluse, by one gone for the household life. What are the two? Sensual indulgence and self-mortification, which lead to no good. The middle path, understood by the Tathagata, the perfect one, after he avoided the extreme, gives vision and knowledge, and leads to calm, realization, enlightenment, nibbana. And what monk is the middle path? It is this Noble Eightfold Path, then mainly right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, then right effort, right mindfulness, and right samadhi. So all those is already discussed in the sutta. Then after that he said, release I am monk from all times, whether human or divine. You also are released from fetters, whether human or divine. Means after the five ascetic, realize the enlightenment. Then after that, we go on to that part where he really explained the Four Noble Truths when it's tree turning. Once the Buddha was in Kosambi, near Samsipa Grove. Then gathering a handful of leaves in his hand, the Buddha addressed the monk. What do you think, monk, which is greater in quantity? Handful of Samsipa leaves gathered by me, or what is in the forest overhead? Not many, trifling, venerable sir, are the leaves in the handful gathered by the Blessed One. Many other lives in the forest over here. Then the Buddha replied, even so, monk, many other things I have fully realized, but not declared all to you. Few other things I have declared all to you. And why, monks, have I not declared them? They, monk, are indeed not useful, not conducive, not essential for the holy life of purity. They do not lead to dispassion. They do not lead to cessation, to tranquility, to full understanding, to enlightenment in the here and the now, to the unconditioned Nibbana. That's why they are not declared by me. And what is it, monk, that I have declared? This is suffering. Thus have I declared a first turning. This is the arising of suffering. Thus have I declared. This is the cessation of suffering. Thus have I declared. This is the path leading to the cessation of suffering. Thus have I declared. And why, monk, have I declared this truth? They are indeed useful and essential to the holy life of purity. They lead to dispassion. They lead to renunciation. They lead to cessation, tranquility, and full understanding of enlightenment, to the unconditioned, to Nibbana. That's why they are declared by me. Thus spoke the Buddha. So this shows to us how important the Four Noble Truths is. And after that, he continued by turning the Four Noble Truths three times. Then I move on to another page, page 42. Now this one is about the 18th sense rhyme, the sixth sense dog. This one is also very important. He told Mahali, invisible form, sound, smell, taste, and tactile object. These are sense objects which men experience through their sense faculty, are entirely subject to suffering, beset with suffering, and entirely bereft of pleasure and happiness. Being will not take delight in this sense object. But Mahali, because there is pleasure and happiness in this sense object, beings take delight in them and cling on to them. Because of this clinging, they defile themselves and they are afflicted. So this is an opening statement which is very important. So do not be deluded. Even though sense experience can give rise to pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, but understand that these are due to your mind's discrimination, your habitual tendency, your like and dislike, your conditioning. Then the Buddha continues it. Through sense faculties, men are attracted to sense objects, delight in them, and derive enjoyment, or what he called asada. It is a fact that cannot be denied, for you experience it. Neither the delightful object nor the enjoyment, however, are lasting. They suffer change. Now when a man cannot retain or get what he wants, or is deprived of the pleasure that delights him, he often becomes sad and unhappy. He dislike monotony, for lack of variety makes him unhappy, and looks for fresh delight, like cattle that seeks fresh pasture. But this fresh delight too are fleeting, and a passing show, means impermanent. Thus all pleasure, whether we like it or not, are prelude to pain and suffering, misery. All mundane pleasure are fleeting, like sugar-coated pill of poison. They deceive and harm us. So all this is Dhamma. Then the Buddha finally said this to Mahali. He said, Mahali, invisible form, sound, smell, taste, and tactile object are entirely subject to pleasure, beset with pleasure, and not bereft of pain. Beings will not be disgusted with sense object, But Mahali, because there is pain and non-lasting pleasure in this sense object, they feel disgusted. Being disgusted, they do not delight in clinging onto them. Not clinging, they purify themselves. Then he explained to Mahali, there are these three types of suffering. Suffering in its most obvious form, dukkha dukkata, means suffering within suffering. Then there is this suffering or the unsatisfactoriness of condition state, sankhara dukkata, means mind state. Then finally is viparina dukkata, suffering caused by change. So this one all we have gone through. All mental and bodily suffering such as birth, old age, sickness and death associated with people whom we don't like, dissociated from our loved one and prized possession or separation, not getting what one desire or one are the ordinary suffering of daily life called dukkha dukkata. Then they continue with sankhara dukkata. According to the text, they explain sankhara dukkata as the grasping to the five aggregate of form and mind. Then finally is viparina dukkata due to change. Then he said, in short, the five aggregates of grasping, upadana khandhas, are dukkha. So this is called the unsatisfactoriness of condition state. So sankhara dukkata is part of it. Then after that, the Buddha continued. He shared this part, which is very good. Thus it is perception that brings about memory. Actually, it's the other way around. The author write it wrongly. It's from memory that we arise perception. Then he said, the Buddha therefore compared perception to a mirage. So it is important to note that perception always deceives us. Then they become known as illusion or perversity of perception. Sanya vipalasa means false perception. Then a simile will illustrate the point. A farmer, after sowing a field, will set up a scarecrow to protect the seed, and for a time, the birds will mistake it for a human being and will not settle on it. That is an illusion of perception. Similarly, sense and mental objects deceive our mind by producing a false impression. The Buddha therefore compared perception or sanya to a mirage. Then when a particular perception pervert or not occur frequently, it grows stronger and creeps our mind. Then it becomes difficult to get rid of that perception. And the result is well explained in the verse called the Sutta Nipata. Who is free from sense perception, in him no more bond exists. Who by insight freedom gains, all delusions cease in him. But who clings to dense perception and to viewpoints wrong and false, he lives wanger in this world. So this saying in the Sutta Nipata is very good. Okay, there's another part on consciousness which is also very good, page 48. The fifth aggregate of mind is consciousness, viññānaṁ khandhas, which is the most important of the aggregate, for it is the receptacle, like I explained to you, like a container to receive the content of consciousness. So this is the most important of the aggregate, for it is the receptacle, so to speak, for all the 52 mental concomitant or factors, which is the content of consciousness, sankhara. Since without consciousness, there is no mental concomitant or factors, consciousness and the mental concomitants are interrelated, interdependent, and coexisting. Then he went on to the faculty of mind. mano indriya, which cognizes mental object. We know it's not something tangible and perceivable, like the other five faculties, which recognizes the external world. So we have gone through, the eye recognizes the world of color and visible object, means color, shape, and form. The ear, audible sound, and so forth. The mind, however, recognizes the world of ideas and thought. Indriya means faculty, literally means law. Form can only be seen by the faculty of eyes and not by the... Oh, this one is wrong. It said not by ear, hearing, by the faculty of ear and so on. No, that hearing also has sense data. And that is also, we call it mental form. It is not only what you see, color, shape, and form. That one is wrong. It is very important here to understand the function of consciousness. Although there is this functional relationship between the faculties and the sense object, for instance, eye with form, ear with form, sound, and so on, awareness comes through consciousness. In other words, sense object cannot be experienced with the particular sensitivity without the appropriate kind of consciousness. Now when eye and form are present, visual consciousness arises dependent on them. So this one I have gone through with you. Our mind is capable of being conscious of what we see, what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, and what we tactile feel and think. Then, of course, if you are mindful, you are aware, you will see the contact. When these three things come together, how consciousness comes to be. So all this, you will come to experience them. And this is what meditation is all about. And to see this, you must have mindfulness. Then there's another partner, he said. He asked somebody, he said, what is this consciousness, sati? Here the Buddha expressed it very well. It is that which expresses, which can also feel and experience the result of good and evil deeds, now here, now there. So here, the author mix up consciousness with the actual sati. The actual sati is awareness before the known. So this one is actually consciousness itself. Consciousness is not sati. Then the author said, but to whom, foolish man, have you heard me teach the Dhamma in this way? Have I not in many ways explained consciousness as dependent originating, as arising out of condition, that apart from condition, there is no arising of consciousness. The Buddha then explained the different type of consciousness and make clear by means of example how consciousness arises depending on condition. So this one you must have the silent mind, the mindfulness, the awareness to see, to observe and understand. Otherwise, you cannot understand. Then he said, he who understands the true nature of life is the happiest person, for he is not deluded, upset by the effervescent nature of things. He tries to see things as they are and not as they seem to be. Conflict arises in man when he is confronted with the facts of life, such as aging, disease, death, and so forth. But frustration and disappointment do not vex him when he is ready to face them with a brave heart, with wisdom and understanding. This view of life is neither pessimistic nor optimistic, but realistic. And it goes on. The man who ignores the principle of unrest in things or impermanence, characteristic, the intrinsic nature of suffering, is upset when confronted with the vicissitudes of life. where he is not trained, he has not trained his mind to see things as they are. Then this one, when somebody passed away, the Bodhisattva have this proclamation which is very good. He said, a mother was asked why she did not grieve and lament over the death of their beloved son. Her answer was very profound. I think this one was the Bodhisattva and the wife at that time. The answer is, you listen, uninvited he came, uninvited he passed away. As he came, so he went. What use is there in lamenting, weeping and wailing? Thus people bear their misfortune with equanimity. Such is the advantage of a tranquil mind. He is unshaken by loss and gain, blame and praise, and undisturbed by adversity. The frame of mind brought about by the view, the sensual world, in its by viewing the sensual world in its proper perspective, thus calm and even-minded. Thus calm or evenness of mind leads men to enlightenment and deliverance from suffering. So this part is very good. Then there is this sentence, all the so-called mundane pleasure, they are fleeting in nature, impermanent, finally end up in suffering and misery. So all sensual pleasure, if you are mindful, aware, is a prelude to suffering. So when you are in a situation or condition where you can have the good food and all those things, always remember the Dhamma is a prelude to suffering when you attach and cling. If you have wisdom, don't attach and don't cling, then it will not entangle you. Because when there is condition to have them, you can have them. There is your parami, your fruition of your karma. But when there is no condition, do not lament. Then the Buddha also said, a burden indeed are the five aggregates of form and mind. Happy it is to lay down this burden of the five aggregates of form and mind with understanding. This is Nibbana, the unconditioned, that leads to absolute peace. Nibbana paramang sukhang. So all these are the understanding. Then he said, happy indeed we live. We who have no burden, our joy we ever fade, like radiant dainties. So this is what the Buddha's enlightenment is all about. With that wisdom and the understanding, they are very meaningful and very helpful. There's one more part, page 91. Monk, it is true, not understanding, not penetrating the Four Noble Truths, that we run around so long, wander about in samsara, in this cycle of birth and death, both you and I. But when these Four Noble Truths are understood and penetrated, rooted out is the craving for existence, destroying is that which leads to renewal, becoming, and there is no more coming to be. So long as my knowledge and vision of reality regarding this Four Noble Truth and its three phases are turning and 12 mode was not fully clear to me, I did not proclaim to have attained the incomparable supreme enlightenment in the world. But when my knowledge and vision of the reality regarding the Four Noble Truth in its three turning was clear to me, then I proclaim to have won the incomparable supreme enlightenment in the world. So this was what was stated in the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the first sermon of the Buddha. And he himself, being a Bodhisattva also, he need to realize this Four Noble Truth in his three turning before he can proclaim to be the fully enlightened one. So that shows to us how important it is this Four Noble Truth and its three turning, understanding and wisdom. So the cultivation should center on the Four Noble Truth and its three turning, especially the Noble Eightfold Path. In fact, the Noble Eightfold Path is a final summary of the whole Four Noble Truth. Because from the first path factor of right view, all the teachings are there. Then it leads to all the other path factor. And to be a noble one, enlightened being, you must have the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path factor. That's why Four Noble Truth accumulate into Noble Eightfold Path. So whatever you do in the name of meditation, if it does not bring you back to the cultivation of the Four Noble Truth, then it is not the meditation taught by the Buddha. Always remember that. Okay, good.